Namo Tassa Bhagavato One of the most important visible things during any Buddhist ceremony is the taking of refuge. You have the respect to the Buddha and the naming, and then taking refuges, and then the precepts, for example, the other things like the meditation on loving kindness. There are a few things which almost start every ceremony, every temple observance, and one of them is the refuges. And so I thought today we would have a look at the word and the ideas behind that. You have Buddhang Saranam Gacchami, Dhammang Saranam Gacchami, and Sangham Saranam Gacchami. And you have then, in addition to that, Dutiyampi and Tatiyampi, which those are translated as twice and thrice, or it's the second time and for the third time. If you turn to your mirror of the Dhamma. I'm also going to ask you after this to do a bit of Pali verb endings and see if you can figure them out. The Gacchami part, you can see a relationship to ga, wa, ga. Also, you see gas very frequently, but gacchami is a verb to go. Sorry, the me part. Gacchati is the verb. Gacchati. To go. And me, we've already possibly learned, is the first person singular. I'm going to ask you to find out, see if you can find out, make a list of the endings of verbs. So anyway, I go, gacchami. To go, gacchati. So that's the first very simple translation. Buddhang, I think by now you should be familiar with that. You can take many, many translations of that. And Dhamma, the M is an ending. So on. I go to the Buddha. Now there would be Buddho. So on. Buddhang is like, in a sense, the object, so you have, you can also draw up a list of the endings, what they indicate. Hena, asa, so on. You work it out when you're what's called the conscience. What you may decline to do with the conscience. You know, at a very early age, I was unfortunately affected by Stephen Leacock's writings, of which you get. And one of the atrocious examples is the story of a man, young man who was running on a bank, I think. His name could have been Oliver. And Oliver was running on the bank, and he caught a draft. But the bank refused the draft. He fell ill with a cold. So now you know where some of these atrocious puns that this being engages in come from. So we should do something also about, however, the word sangham, sangho, sangha, that sort of thing, and we will. But saranam, because it's used, by the way, called the three refuges, sarana. It probably should be sarana, because that would make it then plural. But if you just say the three refuge, you could keep it, I suppose, in the singular, which is a short A. Long A would be plural. Basic is, at least you know, you can count to three. Eka, dwe, ti. And in Sanskrit, tri. Dutiyampi, it's almost dvaitiyampi. That's coming from that. Tatiyam, tati, right? Duti and tati are twice and thrice to dve and ti. It's a little changed, but in English, so is the word twice from two. Thrice from three. Quite the same, but they're from the same group. So, but saranam, because it is the start, usually. Even in the Tibetan, you do a different refuge concept. Paldun Lama, so start with Paldun Lama. But the idea of refuge is very important, taking refuge. The basic translation is house or shelter. So you could translate it, I take my shelter in the Buddha. You know, that's a, I suppose, the first fort, in a way. Fortress, you know, fortress, you know, or something. It's a wall around, I delineate that out, and I take in that concept, I build not a vehicle, but a place to stand in the world and to receive nourishment. And here, everything is associated with a house or a shelter. Of course, you can use it as I took shelter from wild animals. And that's sort of behind, especially in this society with its madness of wars. It's dangerous out there in many ways. You think, maybe just sort of standard paranoia. But considering the nature of this society, it's quite a reasonable one. So on with everything that is occurring. Now, however, there are associated words, the sara part. Very frequently means movement. This is very strange, because the long word sarana means house. The particles of it, you could almost, just to give you an idea, a play, because the ancients liked to sort of juxtaposition ideas to indicate two things at once. And one is movement, and maybe the other is like no wandering, no movement, something very stable. I take refuge in the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha, because that's a very stable way of progression to relate to it, not just, sort of just turning it a bit, saying, I'll just sort of wander. Not necessarily have a philosophy or an ideology or anything. And your life become very bitter and purposeless at the point where it's mixed up, confusion. So an idea, such a strong idea, is a kind of a shelter to, rather like Luther, here I stand. I take my stand in these ideas, Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. So that's there. Some of the related words But it also, in a way, indicates that by the refuge, by taking this idea of firmness, also protection, in the midst of a very mad world, there will also be movement, there will be progression, sara, to awakening. Because also sara sometimes means arrow, the flight of an arrow, somehow. Even though most arrows are aimed at the sky, I guess you could say there's a come down, you know, an idealism. but there is that idea. And the similes in the ancient texts are not merely an arrow shot up into the air, where I landed, I know not where, so I shot another one to see where it went, kind of thing. But an arrow hitting a bullseye. They use that similarly for the transcendental very frequently. The change of lineage knowledge, which is called gotrapunya, difficult to translate, and sort of path, right? Path. It's very sure that it will, when the consciousness transcends the ego, that it will experience universality or totality. There's a totality, mystical totality experience, and it's very sure. So all you have to do is put down the clinging, the work is finished, done. But only done through the direct experience of the path, upstream, downstream, so moving. To experience the sure moving streams, no matter even how dammed up they are, normally, flow to the ocean of Dharmadhatu, and every individual life has the possibility, potential, of flowing to the ocean. So, of full knowing. So, we have, with that word, many possibilities. I will just check the dictionaries and see if there's any other small crumbs that could fall from the table. So on. One of the other meanings, apart from fluid and so on, that come in some of the Sanskrit-related things are, in fact, like a tree. You imagine a tree that's rooted in the ground, in reality, in truth. And there's always that idea of course there's aspiration, of course beings indulge in spiritual fantasy, and they put on very nice blossoms, and all that in the tree, and it's very colorful. But basically, every tree has its roots in dharma. It's because dhar, D-H-A-R, means support. Even your creation of fantasies and spiritual fantasies come out of reality. I mean, the reality that beings are destined to grow, and of course, whilst they're growing, they need to be in accordance with reality, and being in accordance with reality is in fact a shelter. It's a support for the being to be well grounded. And so you should all have respect for nature. Two things. You may, there's an old saying, is head in the clouds in Dharma, head in the clouds, feet on the ground. By that, the trees and the vegetation are wondrous clouds. They are beauties, and you are founded in that. And a good foundation of that actually fulfills the deepest and most powerful realizations in the being, the head in the clouds. So, in fact, a guru, a Lama's teaching is called the way of the white clouds, pure clouds. It's the same because of the clouds on the top of the mountains. So, of course, naturally, my picture, if you wish, of a very well-balanced human being has much aspiration, if not total aspiration, but, much idealism, but also a very good grounding that the idealism comes from a reality, from some merely sort of wishy-washy fantasy number. It's based on truth. So we have that. I'll just check the Pali once more. Mm-hmm. And whilst I'm doing this, which we look Sangha. It's very important. By the way, usually, may I give you the orientation always, the Pali dictionary is not as rich as the Sanskrit. Sanskrit has had much more work done on it. And of course, the original language is the Sanskrit. And the Pali, too, is a cruder form of Sanskrit. I don't want to say degenerate, because it was language spoken, as I mentioned before, by the people. So, one of the meanings, if you rather push it a bit, is envelopment. I would be enveloped, that sort of thing. Now, that doesn't sound at first, seem at first looking at it or hearing it to be necessarily very profitable. But your first shelter was an envelope. You were in an envelope at one time. It's called the embryo. And in that, growth took place. So we have the idea also that taking refuge in Buddha Dhamma and Sangha is equivalent to a period of growth that surrounded by this idea. It envelops you, and so on. So it's an opportunity for growth, your first envelope, that sort of thing. Now, it's not, I envelop myself in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and Sangha, unless you're saying I really immerse myself in that, in the embryonic fluid of that idea. All right? So that's another possibility. So there's a little more that you know what is being said. And now we will just pause and return to the third important refuge. You can easily see the refuge of, let's make it very, very simple, the idea of a fully unfolded being, an aspiration. And possibly the whole universe desires you to aspire. Remember, very strong at this point of growth. Organisms are sent to grow, to survive, to survivre, a little higher in life, to really expand and make it through. That's the universe does that. So that's why we take refuge in bodhicitta, because it's true, it's basic, it is the foundation of an organism, right? Sent forth, right? If there was a God there, he said, go forth and multiply. Go forth and multiply. And then it's developed. Not merely procreate necessarily, but multiply in your being on unfold and expand and understand and become safe. And the more knowledge there is, by the way, more protection in the midst of this world. Hmm? You know how to dodge at least all the arrows of outrageous fortune, at least artfully. Hmm? So on. Yes?
I was thinking, I was very disappointed in people and things around me, and I thought, well, there was just like nothing to rely on. Mm-hmm. And could I say that the one could rely on the Dharma or on the teaching?
Yes,
the
you can give reliance because it was actually achieved and it's achievable. It's been done. And it's not merely for the being saying, done is that which had to be done, this imperative, this universal imperative, but it has been achieved and by a human being and human beings, more than merely one. And it's not one Buddha in the human identity sense. There have been many Buddhas. It's not merely in Shakyamuni, per se, but all by the whole process that it is possible in a human being to fully awaken and understand. And that is a reality. That's a far more of a reality than the war in Iraq, which is based on all sorts of fantasies, right? Mm-hmm. Or the government's economic position. Excuse me, even a lot of the machinations of Parliament, you get very much a sense. There was a poll taken recently, and there's a vast disillusionment with the parliamentary process, etc. You think your vote counts, and in many ways actually doesn't. Hmm? So on, there are promises and then broken promises. But the Buddha promise cannot be broken because it's been done. It was, in a sense, not merely done for the being, but it's done for you. And the Dharma, the laws of the universe, don't change. You may master them and skillfully use them. So you may be granted more insights into the law of gravity, and you may come up with gravitons, as your Stephen Leacock watching it in with great gravity. That sort of thing. Well, it makes you hear what maybe the word gravity means, mm-hmm. heavy on mm-hmm. attraction, pull, or something. But those things are dependable. What may be the more controversial one is, I don't think ultimately controversial, and that is the Sangha. You see, were they good or were they bad? Or do they uphold, are they of good conduct and pure conduct, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the principle is that you, if you expand it out to what the Buddha said, what you need is kalyanamitta. As you take kalyanamitta, that is suitable friends, friends that support you in the enlightenment, there are innumerable beings, actually all beings are in aspiration, but in distorted forms of the aspiration. They have an aspiration. They become a bank manager or whatever it is. You know, this, that, and success, and so on. But the principle of aspiration is inbuilt. And you depend on, like all sentient beings, your mothers, they're, in a sense, feeding you in this transmission. But the Buddha said, of course, naturally, not maybe that everyone supports you in a way, is you want the support of those that have practiced and awakened. You need support on the path. You receive teaching, for example. All of that is fairly clear, that there are innumerable beings joining you, if not all sentient beings, desiring refuge. You can also depend on that, certainly more than the various gripes and grievances you may have about this, that, and the other. The principle of it's usually translated as the order, of the Sangha, but of the community, that Sanghas translate the community, expand that out a bit, a communion of beings who are practicing. Mm-hmm. In a, going back to the person who's aspiring to be a bank manager or business success, they too are something in a sense of a refuge. I know it's going to sound very funny. That is, they're trying something. Hmm? Taking refuge in those, I'm expanding it out. To at least get involved with people who are working, who are doing, not necessarily complaining and moaning and defeatist, but who have got something going, as you would say, whether they're doing, say, arts or sciences. It may be a relatively pale reflection of the grand march or the grand movement, Sara, to enlighten them, but it's those beings you should be, not to associate with fools, those that have dissipated the energy, those that are working. This is a very important point. And of course the symbol of those who are working, a very clear example, those who are working directly on enlightenment, as particularly in the ancient order, but also in the modern, modern ordained people, that's a symbol of somebody working directly on the path. And you should take refuge in beings who are working on the path, not merely the achievers like Buddha, but in a sense the Sangha Bodhisattva, someone who is doing, say, compassionate work in a hospital. And you take that as Sangha. It's allowable to do it. I'm not, you see, here I'm not saying people with ordinations are necessarily better than other beings, but theoretically are working beings working directly on awakening to the exclusion, hopefully, of trying to become a business success or a bank manager or other paler reflections of what life is about. So, have you now Sangha?
Sangha.
Never. The first, see, the word itself is literally it's comprising, but one of the meanings is multitude. I take refuge in the mass. I take refuge in the multitude. That's its primary thing, not the assembly of the ordained. Just right. Two ideas. First idea is in the mass movement of all creatures to awaken and their various manifestations of their awakening. If you really wanted to be silly, crazy wisdom, I take refuge in the squirrels, if the squirrel's happy and has collected quite a number of nuts. The multitude of all creatures, so on, work with the enlightenment principle. Only later did it become, by the way, later become the ordained. And actually, the ordained are only a symbol of the work, perhaps, that went on then. In the later reflection on the order, you see an extended idea. The order that is spoken about. This order of the disciples of the happy one, or the blessed one, Bhagavato. Namely, these four pairs of persons, Yaridan, Chatari, By the way, chatari is the word which relates to four. Chata. Parisa yogani atta parisa pugala. Atta is the eight kinds of individuals. All of this, by the way, is worthy of offerings, is worthy of hospitality, is worthy of gifts, is worthy of reverential salutation, an incomparable field of merit to the world, field of strength. See, again, refuge, strength. Take the word punya ketan as strength. Now, the book that I have is page 6. This is just a little dip into this meditation on Sangha. We have some ideas there that when it's referring to four pairs of persons, 4 times 2 is 8, can do that. That is path and fruition, path and fruition, path and fruition, path and fruition. Beings that attain path, beings that have attained fruition of the path at the 4 different levels. Now, this is the refuge. That is the attained Buddha on the way to the attainment, those beings who are firmly protected because they have entered the transcendental or path realization. They are dependable because that movement is dependable in them. Even if, for example, the beings of Tapana stream enter, you can depend on them because of the inevitability within the most of 7 lifetimes, 6 incarnations, of them fulfilling Buddha or complete purification. And with the Sakadagami Muni ones, I mean, that movement in them is dependable. You can't rely on that. That is fixed. The transcendental is quite immovable on that point. So they are bound to become fully awakened, fully pure being, fully a being of loving kindness, etc. And that's the refuge that you are taking. So in a way with the Sangha, you are taking refuge in path or stream because once that experience has occurred, it is dependable. You can shelter in that, like a boat traveling that river. It's an unsinkable boat also. I'm just trying to give you kind of imagery to work with. Where you see the 8 kinds of individuals, the 8 kinds of manifestations, if you wish. Parisa Atta, Parisa Pugala refers to the higher, the real order. Less than the transcendental, they may be disorderly, not dependable. But beings who have whoever and whatever means, they are a shelter, a field of strength for humanity. Whether there was only 1 or 2 or 1,000or more, whatever, wherever they are the pillars that also of the strength of the existence on this planet and throughout the universe. They are an actual energy field. Now, we're not talking symbolically. So, just as I told you before, you can bring people to them, they would be healed. They would be healed. So, if they allow the healing, that is, of course, Jesus said, by faith was made, they won't. So, you just don't actually wish the healing, but if they wish healing, then that is field of merit, field of strength. I want you to think, and that's a protection. For all beings, not merely for you who repeat the refuge. But of course, it is a stronger refuge for you when you know what is occurring. So, we have Dharma realization. So here are ideas. But notice that first one, multitude. And you wouldn't normally say, well, I take refuge in all the people in Toronto. No, you wouldn't say that. Sounds, no, but all the people in Toronto are trying through distorted means to come through to realization of happiness. They're desiring, however you may think that the mirror is, as St. Paul said, you see through the glass darkly. They're trying. Some manifestation of that is occurring. Also in motherhood, by the way. So, some of you may even say particularly. It's there, even the coming of children, and the having of children, and the whole process is a process of awakening. So, it does change things around. Than the value structure. And it's erroneous for you to think, oh, well, I take refuge in the ordained monks, because that's not deep enough. I guess even in some way or other they're trying. But it's also a symbol that the attempt A should be made. I suppose if you went to the, I was just discussing today, by the way, visit, might take place in August of the Nepalese temples, particularly Mi'kmaq and Karju. And there are reasons for that. And, you know, imagine you went to the to see Mount Everest, and you went to the foot of Mount Everest and you saw a lot of mountain equipment around, you know, here and there and so on. Scaling ropes and all the rest of it. At least you might think, seeing the scriptures and songs a bit like that, maybe there was a mountain climbing took place. And at least you saw someone geared up as a mountain climber. You might think that somebody or other, right, not just long ago, but recently has climbed the mountain. And so it's like that. So you're taking refuge in the idea that mountains can be climbed, that there are people that have climbed them, and there are, right? But after you've climbed them, and, you know, you've done it, maybe you throw the equipment away and you abandon it. Done is that which had to be done. There are little remnants and things around. All right? So on. But don't confuse the mountain equipment and, you know, right? In clothing for the climbing the mountain. But it's something. It's the idea that you respect. And by the way, when you respect, when you come in, you respect the Buddha Rupa, you're not respecting so much the chaitya and the rupas and the robes, but the idea, the refuge. You think, I am taking refuge in Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. Which means also, I can do it, and it is occurring in me. You're taking refuge in that, too, by the way. You are one of the multitude. That's why when you do the refuge tree, you visualize all beings taking refuge. You say, oh, well, I don't see them coming out to the Dharma Center here, pouring in. You just don't see deep enough. Don't see deep enough. And the tree, Sara also means the tree of life and growth. Because, you know, that's probably the strongest symbol of growth. You take a little plant and say, oh, yeah, that's growing. But trees really grow. There you go. There. What's the biggest thing that grows? That you can see? You know? A tree. So on. Some of the ancient trees, hundreds of feet up. I mean, you could say, you know, take refuge in a little. This little plant and so on. Oh, yes, it's very nice. But the others are impressive, and it's meant to be. And you can easily see the network of all the connection. Unless, of course, you develop more microscopic eye. It's all growth. It's the biggest growth. It's even bigger than the elephants. Bigger than the dinosaurs. Or the trees. So, and besides which, even it even forces growth, nature, even forces, next to be extended in aspiration. So I think, right, you should get aspiration going, just like a giraffe extends, you know, through evolution its neck to deal with that, get some of the higher, you understand. Hmm? Don't so worry about overextending yourself. Your neck will grow to power.
Don't worry about the thorns.
Yes. It's marvelous what people live on. I always think, there's a picture in my mind, and I'd like to share it with you, and that is, by the way, possibly next year it will be repeated if you're interested, is camping and exploring by four-wheel vehicle the Sahara. Mm-hmm. And in the Sahara, there, of course, there are wonders. Occasionally you come across an oasis with running water. And instead of having palm trees around, you have reeds, tall reeds that are about two or three times taller than you are, and birds and ducks in them. It's incredible. But most of the vegetation is a sort of thorn tree. And one of the great miracles of life, to me, and I mean it, I feel it, is to watch a camel eat a thorn tree. They put their tongue around it, you know, because when you walk, if you step on one of those, it'll go right through your shoe and right through your foot. And they put their tongue right around them and just crunch them without any piercing of their mouth or tongue or anything. And you are forced to absolutely gape at it. And you sit down and you sort of scratch your head and you ponder, how could they do it? So I don't know whether camels could be said to be the most intelligent creature on earth, but they have an inordinate amount of power or potential to eat, to deal with thorns. And to me, it's also speaks about the resilience of the human being who goes through so much of what the society and families lay out and trying to submerge them and pierce them with various thorns, and somehow, still the struggle for enlightenment goes on, but somehow it's dealt with and, put in for digestion, and you can even live on the thorns, and that is a great statement. It's a great refuge, that the ability of the evolutionary mind, if you wish, putting on of intelligence to deal with more and more difficult situations. You want to put up rocket ships to the moon and into the depths. You do hear me. There is such a powerful drive of the growth of intelligence despite the thorns, despite the various crucifixions, etc. The power towards the resurrection, how strong it is. So with that, I'd like to conclude today's talk, because it's pithy. I go, and of course we have the idea of move. Not so much even I come, I go. I go by, I make progress by Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. There's a movement. The stream, Sahara, occurring. Stream of the universe. Sure it is. Open are the doors to the immortal. Let those that hear repose trust. Maybe one. Ski home to.